Chapter 16. On the periphery of the Nidu computer network, Brian waited for a sign. He wasn't waiting alone. "They've jumped out of N-Space, you know," Andrea Hader-Ross said, floating next to Brian and sitting at that damned patio table of hers. "I know," Brian said. "I'm getting better at the whole being multiple places at once thing." "There's a good boy," Hader-Ross said. "You're showing off your learning curve again." "Thanks, Grandma," Brian said. "And saucy, too," Hader-Ross said. "Just the way I like my boys." "So, how are you enjoying it, being on the cusp of history?"
"I'm not," Brian said. "I hate the waiting. I want it to begin."
"Patience, Brian," Hader-Ross said. "It won't be long now." "Narf Wingitog is heading his shuttle straight for the Fehenjuni. That's the Imperial Court, you know."
"I know," Brian said.
"Of course you do," Hader-Ross said. "Narf Wingitog isn't even letting Creek and Robin choose an appropriate wardrobe for themselves. He's in such a rush. He's going to have robes waiting for them at the Fehenjuni."
"Can you blame him?" Brian said. "He spent decades plotting and planning. Now he figures he's just an hour or two away from his prize. When you're ready for your future, you want it to happen as soon as possible. This guy's an asshole, but I sympathize with his point of view on that particular subject."
"Well, both of you will be living in the future soon enough," Hader-Ross said. "In the meantime, Brian, sit down and have a cup of tea with me."
"The tea doesn't exist, you know," Brian said. "And anyway, I hate tea."
"Silly boy," Hader-Ross said, as she poured Brian a cup anyway. "I know the tea doesn't exist, and you ought to know by now that just because I give you tea doesn't mean you can't change it to whatever you want when you drink it."
"I never thought of it that way," Brian said.
"I know," Hader-Ross said, holding the cup up for Brian to take, "but you're going to have to get used to thinking about things a whole new way. This is as good a place as any to start."
"Wow," Robin Baker said in spite of herself. "Have you ever seen a room like this?"
"One time," Creek said, "in Jerusalem, the Dome of the Rock. But this is much bigger." The two were standing in the center of the great hall of the Fehen, itself the heart of the immense complex known as the Fehenjuni, the seat of the Fehen. The great hall was impractically large, the size of a football stadium, and topped with a hemispherical dome constructed of giant curving sheets of manufactured, reinforced gemstones. Emerald and ruby and sapphire and tourmaline and opal and garnet were all used like stained glass to form scenes of Nidu mythology and history. Creek had no doubt that Narf Wingitog would displace one of the stories portrayed on the dome to place his own up there to shine in the light of Nidu's sun. In the center of the dome, a manufactured diamond the size of a baby elephant was faceted to collimate the light of the sun straight down to the center of the room to a raised dais which usually held the throne of the Fehen, but which today held the altar upon which Robin Baker would spill her blood. Robin and Creek were not alone in the great hall. They were not even the only humans. Per a now ancient service agreement, two representatives of Legacen were on hand to monitor the performance of the computer network during the ceremony and to focus the computer's projectors, which would create certain images during the proceedings. Around them and Creek and Robin, Nidu apparatchiks buzzed, preparing the room for the ceremony and ignoring the humans in their presence as one would expect the Nidu to do in this, the most important room on the planet. To the side of the altar, a Nidu priest paced, going over the ceremony in his head and attempting not to be scandalized that a human woman would be the sacrifice this time, and that he wasn't actually allowed to sacrifice her completely. In a matter of minutes, the gargantuan doors at the end of the hall would swing open, allowing the guests and official observers of the ceremony into the hall. In their number would be high-ranking members of government from more than 200 worlds and mid-ranking members of government from the rest, as well as a low-end representative from the CC itself, a general reflection of the overall status of Nidu in the CC hierarchy of worlds. As a matter of status, President Webster of Earth really should have been the one to attend the ceremony. Rather inconveniently, however, it conflicted with a long-planned state visit from the president of Frugi, one of the rather more important worlds in the CC. And so Webster was not disposed to attend. In these circumstances, Secretary of State Heffer was a reasonable substitute. There was a small irony, therefore, in the fact that the suddenly worsening relations between Earth and Nidu had caused the president of Frugi to cancel her visit. Technically, the president was free to attend the coronation.
As a practical matter, however, his world was looking down the launchers of two planet cracker bombs, and so, once again, it did not make the best of sense for him to be there. Some short time after the guests were assembled, Narf Wingetog would enter the Great Hall, ascend the dais, and perform a series of general rituals that announced his intent to take the throne of Nidu. These preliminary rituals were not strictly required for ascension to the throne, but they were traditional, and they gave the ceremony a nice, rounded feel. After the preliminaries came the required sections, which were created by the Ofgetogs after the clan had initially ascended the throne. Many clans who had previously ascended the throne had larded their coronation ceremonies with so many actions and details that all but the most attentive of candidates ran the very real risk of screwing up and disqualifying himself and his clan, thus throwing Nidu, yet again, into the throes of civil war. Unlike these clans, the Ofgetogs opted to keep their required rituals simple. A scan of the brain of the sacrificial sheep and the subsequent blood sacrifice, followed by two questions asked by the Nidu computer network. Which clan brings the sacrifice? And what is the bidding of the clan of sacrifice? The intended answers to these questions were, respectively, the Ofgetog clan and give me control of the network. The Ofgetogs were comfortable with such a short ceremony because of the computer network and because of the sheep. He, who controlled the computer network, controlled every aspect of the Nidu government. That was all that was needed to be said about that. Once that kind of extreme power was assigned, it was difficult to fight against. As for the sheep, the computer network could quickly determine the genetics of the blood sacrifice to assure the sacrifice was of the android's dream breed. The brain scan determined that the animal was alive and gauged its mental capacity. The last of these was key. In a small but important detail, the questions asked in the ceremony were technically asked of the sacrificial animal itself, but in the event that the sacrifice could not answer the questions, which was always, the questions could be answered by a member of the clan with legal ownership of the sacrificial animal. This worked out nicely for the Ofgetogs, as the sacrificial animal, being a sheep, could not speak, confirmed by the brain scan, and was killed in any event during the ceremony. The questions always defaulted to a member of the clan which owned the sheep. By Nidu law, the only clan that could legally own the android's dream sheep was the Ofgetog clan. Even if a member of another clan procured a live android's dream sheep, the questions could not be answered by the sheep thief, as his clan did not, in fact, own the sheep. This little detail of the coronation ceremony was the most tightly held secret of the Ofgetog clan, known only to its highest-ranking members. This number included Hubu Ofgetog, who would be attending the ceremony today and who fully expected to perform the ceremony himself after Narf Wingetog's attempt failed, at which point he fully expected to have Narf Wingetog executed for treason right there on the ancient and priceless rugs of the Great Hall in front of the assembled audience of visitors from hundreds of worlds. Then he'd deal with the Glar Destroyer captains. And then, just for fun, he'd decimate the Wingetog clan, executing one clan member in 10 at random. That would be the end of any other thoughts of uprising by any other clan for a good long time. As tightly held as this secret was, it did not originate with the Ofgetog clan itself. Rather, it was suggested to the Ofgetog clan in a batch with a number of other unrelated performance and optimization suggestions by an advisory panel at Legacen, the general contractor building the new Nidu computer network. The Ofgetogs, delighted by the sneakiness of the idea and encouraged by Legacen's rock-solid non-disclosure pact, signed off on it. Now, decades later, they had no idea the secret came from outside their clan. The clan members had simply forgot. "How do you feel?" Creek asked Robin. "Like I'm going to throw up," Robin said. "There's a receptacle," Creek said, pointing to the trough at the altar into which Robin's blood would flow. "Don't tempt me," Robin said. "Also, this hurts like hell." Robin held up her wrist, into which a small medical shunt had been jammed. At the appropriate time in the ceremony, the stopper on the shunt would be turned, and about 2 ounces of Robin's blood would fall into the trough. "I guarantee you it hurts less than the alternative," Creek said. "This is also unreal, Harry," Robin said. "I want to wake up in my crappy little bed, in my crappy little apartment, and have my crappy little breakfast, and then go to work out and clean out crappy little rodent cages." "Soon, Robin," Creek said. "Now, you remember everything you're supposed to do?"
I do, Robin said, and held up her wrist again. Some parts are harder to forget than others.
You're going to do fine, Creek said. Remember that I'm going to be right in the front of the audience.
Where will Tok be? Robin asked. She and Tok had become close during the trip to Nidu.
He'll be with me, Creek said.
Robin giggled. That's bad news for anyone who has to stand behind him. The doors at the end of the hall cracked open. The audience was being let in.
Here we go, Creek said, and turned to Robin. Be strong, Robin. It's almost all over.
Robin came over to Creek. She gave him a peck on the cheek. Thank you, Harry, she said, for everything. And no matter what I said before, you really are a fun date.
Thanks, Creek said.
Next time, though, Robin said, let's just go to a movie. She walked back up to the altar. Creek headed down toward the crowd to find Ben Jovna and Jim Heffer. He found them near the back. Jovna came over and grabbed his arm in greeting. Creek winced.
Sorry, Harry, Jovna said, but goddamn, it's good to see you alive, kid. Although from the looks of it, it's a close thing.
Thanks, Ben, Creek said. It's good to be alive, close or not.
Creek looked to Heffer, who walked up next to Jovna.
Secretary Heffer, he said.
Mr. Creek, Jim Heffer said. Good to finally meet you. Prime Minister Creek, I should say. We heard about your promotion.
You owe me for that one, Jovna said. It's a nice job.
Yeah, but look what I had to do to get it, Creek said.
If this coronation goes off, you're not likely to keep it long, Heffer said.
Narfwin Gitog's been playing everybody. We all got bushwhacked. Ben's legal victory is just about the only thing that went right for us. I'm laying decent odds that at the end of this ceremony, Ben and you and I get marched off to a POW camp.
And yet you still showed up, Creek said.
Hope springs eternal, Heffer said. And we're not at war yet. We're diplomats, Harry. Maybe there's another way out.
Maybe, Creek agreed.
Someone tapped Heffer on the shoulder. Heffer turned to acknowledge them and then nodded his goodbyes to Creek and Jovna.
Well, Jovna said after Heffer had gone, what's going on?
What do you mean? Creek asked.
You're here, Jovna said. She's here. I didn't tell you to come out of hiding yet, and you're not stupid enough or slow enough to get caught, so you're up to something, and I hear that you're here because you made some sort of deal with Narfwin Gitog.
It's not what you think, Creek said.
That's good, Jovna said, because I have really no clue what I'm thinking right now. I just hope somewhere along the way you manage to pull all of our feet out of the fire, and maybe manage to convince old Narf to pick someone not entirely despotic to rule the earth.
I know one person it's not going to be, Creek said, and told Jovna about Jean Schroeder.
Choked to death by a Nidu on the plain of Pajmi, Jovna said, when Creek had finished.
There may be more ironically poetical ways for that shithead to go, but right off the top of my head, I can't think of any.
Horns sounded, signaling the audience to take their places.
Time for the pain, Jovna said.
Listen, Ben, Creek said, drawing close. Something's going to happen in the ceremony. Something that I haven't prepared you for. Something that goes back a long way between us. I don't have time to explain it now. You'll know it when you see it. When it happens, try not to hate me too much.
Jovna looked at Creek.
Harry, Jovna said, whatever it is, if it gets us all out of this with our skin intact, that's good enough.
Don't worry. You're like a brother to me. You know that.
Hold that thought, Ben, Creek said. Remember you said it.
Tok came up to Creek.
It's time to take our places, he said.
Holy cow, Jovna said, looking up at Tok.
Hi,
Tok said. When we're in POW camp, you're going to have some interesting tales for me, Harry, Jovna said. I can tell that already.
What's he talking about? Tok said.
I'll tell you later, Creek said. Come on, let's go. The two moved back up the crowd to their assigned position, Tok creating a bow wave with his size and Creek traveling in his wake.
Horns blared. The great hall doors opened once more, and Narfwin Gitog stepped through, wearing the cape and mantle of his clan. Narfwin Gitog did not rush his entrance. He walked slowly and smoothly, directly in the middle of the aisle created by retaining ropes and an audience of 4,000 guests and dignitaries. Narfwin Gitog recognized many, as well he should have, through decades in the Nidu Diplomatic Corps. His eyes sought and found Jim Heffer and Ben Jovna. He nodded to them as he passed and smiled at the memory of having played them rough like cheap violins. With Schroeder out of the way, Narfwin Gitog was free to choose a Nidu administrator for Earth and was considering auctioning off the position to the highest bidder. Someone would pay handsomely to run an entire planet, even a shithole like Earth.
At the head of the crowd, Narf Wingitog spied Hubu Off-Gitog on one side, with a phalanx of Off-Gitogs and Harry Creek and Tok on the other. Neither Hubu Off-Gitog nor Harry Creek struck Narf Wingitog as appropriately fearful in their expressions, although in the case of Creek, it might simply be that Narf Wingitog, even after all that time on Earth, still had trouble with some of the more subtle human expressions. It really didn't matter. Hubu Off-Gitog and his entire clan would be dealt with soon enough, and as for Creek, Tok, and Robin, he'd already made arrangements for that entire nation to be handled. They'd live, they'd just never leave Nidu. Narf Wingitog didn't feel particularly bad about violating the agreement to call off the war on Robin. He'd honored the other three well enough, especially the last one. Narf Wingitog ascended the dais and, as was tradition, recited 17 stanzas of the Revenue, the Nidu species' signature epic poem. It didn't matter which 17 stanzas, merely that there were 17, each stanza representing the 17 original clans of Nidu, of which Wingitog was one. Then followed the blessing of the knife, the prayer to clan ancestors, the salting of the altar, a recitation of the Psalm of the Forgiven, and finally, the second blessing of the knife, symbolically transforming the weapon into an instrument of peace, a swords into plowshares sentiment that, like its human equivalent, was generally forgotten before the last echo of the words had faded. Now came the actual ceremony, and Narf Wingitog found that he relished the idea of speaking the words to a ceremony formulated by the Off-Gitog clan. In his mouth, the words would be like a repudiation of their rule and redemption of the office of Feyhen. Or so Narf Wingitog was fantasizing to himself, while Robin, the sheep woman, had the apparatus for the brain scan placed awkwardly on her head by the priest. This accomplished, she then held out an arm to allow the priest to twist the shunt. Her blood flowed into the trough and passed the sensors that sampled the DNA within to find the magic segments that would confirm her identity as an android's dream sheep. The right kind of sheep. Another repudiation of the Off-Gitog clan, Narf Wingitog thought, that he provided her where they could not. From far recesses of the Great Hall, projectors flared, announcing the acceptance of the android's dream DNA with flaring and beautiful displays of light and color intended to wrap the presumptive Feyhen in a halo of righteous luminescence. The entire altar glowed like polished brass hit by a lighthouse beam, augmenting the light filtering in through the diamond on the roof. It appeared to a few of the observers that more of the light focused on Robin than on Narf Wingitog, but that was likely to be a combination of the simple white robe Robin wore, as well as some confusion by the computer as to which of the tall creatures on the altar to highlight. The computer knew well enough not to highlight the priest. Certainly, Narf Wingitog didn't notice the fact his luminescence was being shared. From discreetly hidden vents, the odor of the Feyensul, the flower of the Feyhens, wafted into the room, its astringent sweetness the ultimate and most sacred word in the Nidu language of scent. The light show settled down, and the light coalesced into a single ball that positioned itself between the altar and the audience. Positional audio kicked in and caused sound to come from the ball, sound that eventually resolved into a voice. "Which clan brings the sacrifice?" it asked, in majestically toned Nidu. Narf Wingitog stepped forward and inhaled deeply to bellow the name of the Wingitog clan to forever clear the air of the shame the Off-Gitog clan brought to the office of the Feyhen. "The Baker clan!" declared a high, thin, nervous voice in heavily accented but perfectly acceptable Nidu. Narf Wingitog choked on his declaration and stared at Robin Baker, who he was somewhat surprised to learn was still standing on the altar with him. Narf Wingitog glared at her, decided that he'd changed his mind and definitely wouldn't let her live after all, and then took in another breath to declare his clan. "What is the bidding of the clan of the sacrifice?" the deep, rich, sonorous voice of the computer asked. "Give me control of the network," Robin Baker declared again in Nidu, "and give Brian Jovna complete access." "Whoops, that's me," Brian said, and got up from the table, leaving his beer behind. "Thanks for the drink, Andrea."
Anytime, said Andrea Hader Ross, and waved.
Don't be a stranger.
Brian drifted over to an open port on the Nidu computer network, which demanded identification. I'm Brian Jovna, Brian said. I think you've heard of me. Some automatic part of Brian translated that into something the Nidu network could understand, validate, verify, and accept. And then, as requested, it gave Brian complete access. Brian was hit with about 40 trillion watts of pure understanding. It's hard to describe to anyone who is not, in fact, a sentient computer. But imagine you're a tapeworm, and then suddenly, you're Goethe. It's like that. Brian experienced an upward expansion of knowledge, power, intuition, and capability unrivaled by any sentient being anywhere and anytime in the history of the Common Confederation. He didn't simply have access to the Nidu computer system, which was, by dint of its sheer Orwellian reach into the tiniest crannies of Nidu governmental life, the single most complex computer system yet devised. He became the Nidu computer system, searing through it at the speed of light and joyously feeling its power and information become his own. There was no word for what Brian was feeling, so he made one up. Infogasm.
Oh boy, Brian thought. That's the sort of thing that will kill you if you do it more than once.
Brian savored the feeling for just a few cycles more, and then did what he came to do. High above Nidu and Earth, six Glar Destroyer captains and crews were shocked to find they were suddenly locked out of their controls and that their ships had minds of their own. Across Nidu space, every Nidu ship lost its defensive and offensive weapons. Individual Nidu soldiers lost control of their cars, their planes, their rifles and weapons. Vehicles in use rolled to a stop or landed at the first safe opportunity. On every CC planet the Nidus had embassies, diplomatic workers banged their terminals in frustration as scenes went blank and reports, applications, and communication ground to a halt. In Nidu space, all government work not related to keeping people alive also similarly ground to a halt. Nidu schools were excused for the day. Nidu children very nearly rioted with joy. All of this happened in the time it takes for a sharp intake of breath. Jesus, this is fun, Brian said, and went to go make a very special appearance. From her vantage point outside the Nidu system, Andrea Hader Ross watched as the network took on a shape and configuration that reflected Brian. There was no doubt it was him.
I remember him when he was just an IBM, Hader Ross said, and sipped her tea.
The bloom of light between the altar and the audience stretched, twisted, and took form.
Oh my God, Ben Jovna said. It's Brian.
Brian turned to Robin and spoke in English, loud enough for the entire audience to hear. It's done, he said. The Nidu computer network is yours and awaits your command. You are now Feyhen of Nidu, Robin Baker. The great hall erupted. For once, it was only barely large enough to hold the commotion.
Thank you, Brian, Robin said through the chaos. And it's nice to meet you.
Likewise, Brian said.
Feyhen! Narf Wingitog bellowed. I am Feyhen!
You're not, Brian said, turning toward Narf Wingitog, because I am the Nidu computer network, and you, sir, are not the boss of me. Narf Wingitog disconnected from any pretense of civility and lunged at Robin Baker. From his distant position in the audience, Talk moved futilely to intercept, but it was Brian who blocked Narf Wingitog. He activated the directional audio of the Great Hall to send a 180-decibel blast directly at Narf Wingitog's head. Narf Wingitog went down, screaming in pain. Talk, reaching the altar, grabbed the fallen Nidu and hurled him bodily off the dais. The Great Hall erupted again.
Brian, Creek said in a conversational tone since he knew Brian could hear him, please amplify my voice so everyone can hear me.
You're on, Creek heard Brian say, as if he were in his ear. Don't do any singing, they're panicked enough. Ladies and gentlemen, Creek said, and he could hear whispers of his words being pitched to the members of the audience in their own language through directional audio. Please be calm. Please calm down. Explanations are coming. Eventually, the crowd noise died down, and Creek stepped out in front of the altar. My name is Harry Creek, he said. The Nagak stepping on Narf Wingitog is Talk. The woman on the stage is Robin Baker.
We are the nation of Robin Baker, recognized by the Common Confederation, and she is now Fahin of Nidu as allowed by the laws of Nidu itself. The crowd erupted yet again. Harry moved to silence them once more. Hubu Afgitog stepped forward out of his phalanx of clansmen. I am Hubu Afgitog, the true Fahin of Nidu, he said in English to the crowd and to Creek. This woman cannot be the Fahin of Nidu, if for no other reason than she is not Nidu. By your laws, and by the coronation procedure your own clan set forth, she does not need to be, Creek said. Your coronation ceremony requires merely an android's dream sheep. Robin Baker has that DNA in her. If she has the android's dream DNA, then by Nidu law she is the property of the clan of Afgitog, Hubu Afgitog said, and a member of that clan must be Fahin. In this case, Nidu law is superseded by Common Confederation law, which declared Robin Baker a new species of sentient being and her own nation under Common Confederation law, Creek said. As a member of the Common Confederation, Nidu is bound to respect her sovereignty and can make no claim on her. You know this since it was your own government's suit that caused the CC to rule for her. A suit whose idea came from Narf Wingitog, Hubu Afgitog said, staring down at the fallen ambassador who was pinned by Tok's leg on his back. Who was at the time a representative of your government? Creek said. And still is, I suppose. Not anymore, Robin said, and turned to Narf Wingitog, who was pinned under Tok's foot. You're dismissed. Dismissal noted, said Brian. This is an invasion, Hubu Afgitog said, trying a new tack. You have attacked us and taken control of our network by illegal means. It is not an invasion, Creek said. We were transported here by a Nidu ambassador in a Nidu vessel and participated by invitation in the coronation ceremony. Narf Wingitog spoke up from the floor. Under false pretense, he rasped, as Tok's foot was limiting his lung capacity. The ambassador is mistaken, Creek said. We agreed to come to Nidu to take part in the coronation ceremony. We didn't specify that in doing so, the crown would fall to him. It is still an act of war, Hubu Afgitog said. If it is, it is defensive, Creek said. When a Nidu gunship attacked a civilian UNE vessel carrying Miss Baker and me, the Nidu Marines who demanded to board specifically served notice to the captain of the ship that Nidu had declared war on Robin Baker. As was recently noted to me by your ambassador, Nidu outnumbers Miss Baker's nation by 3 billion to 1. A declaration of war on a single person, even if she is her own nation, seems excessive. By the laws of the Common Confederation, Miss Baker, as a sovereign nation, has the right to defend herself against an aggressor. This last bit caused rumbling in the audience. Hubu Afgitog glanced back and read the mood in the room. Then he turned back to Creek. Let's you and I talk without the crowd listening in, if you please, he said. Creek nodded and had Brian cut his amplification. The crowd moaned in irritation, but stayed calm. Even if all you say is true, Hubu Afgitog said, there is the matter of the 3 billion to 1 to consider. The Nidu will never follow a sheep woman. Creek smiled. Hubu Afgitog, surely you of all people know that it's not necessary to have the love of the masses, merely the ability to control them, Creek said. We have control of the Nidu computer network, which means we have control of your government and your military. Until you recognize her as Fahin, you're not going to get anything done. Hubu Afgitog leaned in closer to Creek. Your clan is small. If something were to happen to your so-called Fahin, there are only 2 of you remaining. A motivated clan, the Wingitogs, say, could put an end to your rule in short order. Oh, I'm sorry, Brian said, and projected himself over to Hubu Afgitog. I've forgotten my introductions. I'm Brian Jovna, and since the Fahin let me into your network, I've become the network. I'm self-contained and sentient, and I'm also a member of Robin Baker's clan, so if you kill Robin and Harry and Tok, there's still me, and you can't kill me. Don't count on that, Hubu Afgitog said in Nidu. Wherever you go, there I am, Brian said to Hubu Afgitog, also in Nidu. Remember that when you get into your next networked vehicle, Hubu Afgitog. No matter how you want to look at it, Robin Baker has a legitimate claim to the title of Fahin, Creek said, leading the discussion back from disembodied threats. Your ascension rules allowed it. Your government's actions provoked it. Your ambassador's scheming set it in motion. It's all bad news for you, I'm afraid. Hubu Afgitog glared at Creek. Do you enjoy bringing bad news? I don't enjoy it, Creek said.
But it is my job. I'm good at it.
This is not right, Hubu Afkitog said.
This got Robin's attention.
Right? Right? She said, and stalked over to Hubu Afkitog. She jabbed a finger into his chest. It's entirely right. Because of you, people have spent the last 2 weeks trying to kill me, or kidnap me, or sacrifice me so they can rule this crappy little planet of yours. You've tried to kill my friends, you're planning to attack and occupy my planet. This is the only way to get you to stop. Do you think I want to rule your planet? Do you think I have even the smallest concern about what you people do here? I could not care less. All I want to do is go home and get back to my life. This is the only way I know that I'll get to do it.
Hubu Afkitog paused to consider her words.
Perhaps we can reach some accommodation, he said.
Sure, Robin said. We can start by you recognizing that I am your Feyhen. Your clan made the rules. I followed them. I am ruler here. Don't bother trying to use any of your household appliances until you're ready to accept that.
Hubu Afkitog snarled and stalked away toward his phalanx.
I don't think their household appliances are networked, Creek said to Robin. Who cares? It still seemed to work, Robin said.
Ben Javna had, by this time, made his way to the head of the crowd. Creek waved at him to come over.
I've got a message from Heifer, but first you have to tell me something, Ben said.
Brian, it's really him, Ben, Creek said.
Part of him, anyway. I'll explain it to you later.
You're right about that, Javna said.
What does Heifer have to say? Creek said.
He wants to know if you're really pulling this off, or if this is just some sort of enormous con, Javna said.
Oh, it's the real thing, all right, Creek said.
I figured it was, Javna said. In which case, Heifer wants to make an offer of alliance with your friend Robin. Not with Nidu, but with her. Although, we'll recognize her as the legitimate ruler of Nidu. And it comes with the offer to sponsor her for membership in the CC.
A single-person nation in the CC, Creek said. And I thought this had gotten weird enough already.
You guys started it, Javna said.
Let me pass the offer along, Creek said.
I wouldn't have it any other way, Javna said.
He looked over to the image of Brian, who was talking to Talk.
When this is over, do you think I can talk to him?
I think you should, Creek said. I know he wants to talk to you.
Good God, Harry, Javna said. All that time I thought you were just piddling away your talent. You are a piece of work, my friend.
I aim to please, Creek said, and went to chat with Robin. The UNE wants to sponsor your membership in the Common Confederation, Creek said.
Mine? Robin said. As in me, personally?
Creek nodded.
Geez, Harry, I can barely handle a gym membership.
I'm pretty sure this club comes with better perks, Creek said.
Harry, I wasn't lying, Robin said. I don't want any of this. I really don't. I just want you and me and everyone I know to be safe. And I want to go home. That's all I want. Get me out of this, Harry.
Creek looked up.
Here comes Hubu Afkitog, he said. Let's see what he has to say.
Hypothetically, Hubu Afkitog said, if we were to accept Robin Baker as Feyhen, what then?
Creek glanced over at Robin, who nodded.
Well, then Miss Baker would need a governor, Creek said. As you know, she already rules her own country. She believes it would be unfair to her citizens to divide her time.
I agree entirely, Hubu Afkitog said. This governor you speak of, what would his powers be?
They would be like a copy of the powers of the Feyhens herself, Creek said.
That's very intriguing, Hubu Afkitog said.
There are some limitations, Robin said.
Limitations? Hubu Afkitog asked.
Small ones, Creek assured him.
Name them, Hubu Afkitog said.
Don't screw with Earth, Robin said.
I don't know that idiom,
Hubu Afkitog said to Creek.
She means to say that the Earth is now and forevermore off limits for mischief and empire building, Creek said.
I could see a governor agreeing to that, Hubu Afkitog said.
And don't screw with me or my friends, Robin said.
Likewise, retribution against the nationals of Miss Baker, by Nidu or any of its agents, would be looked upon as a grave injustice, Creek said.
As well it should be, Hubu Afkitog said. In fact, I do believe a governor would suggest a treaty between our two nations would be in our mutual interests.
How wonderful, Creek said. It's always heartwarming to discover amity between races.
Anything else? Hubu Afkitog asked.
One other thing, Robin said, and pointed at Narf Wingitog, still pinned under Tok's foot.
This one goes to jail. We can do better than that, I think, Hubu Afkitog said. Indeed, clan-wide retribution is usually the policy in cases like these.
No, Robin said. No one gets killed, and no one else gets punished. Just him, in jail.
Surely you realize he could not have planned all this on his own, Hubu Afkitog said.
I think Miss Baker is hoping that by showing judiciousness, she might help keep other clans from attempting the misfortunate sequence of events that led to this very moment, Creek said.
I see your point, Hubu Afkitog said. And anything else?
Robin shook her head. I think that's it, Creek said.
Out of curiosity, Hubu Afkitog said, in this new world order, would there be a chance for a governor to advance at any point?
Creek glanced over to Robin, who shrugged. I would imagine it would depend on the quality of the governorship and the state of relations with the UNE and the nation of Robin Baker, Creek said. If those relationships were kept on extremely amicable terms, I could easily see a governor being rewarded in 10 to 12 years.
Those are Earth years as opposed to Nidu years, Hubu Afkitog said.
Optimally, Creek said.
And until that time, the Feihen will have, shall we say, a light hand on the wheel of state.
Hubu Afkitog said.
Featherlight, Creek said. One would hardly know it's there. And what about the new, obnoxious personality of the Nidu computer network?
Hubu Afkitog said.
Oh, well, that stays, Creek said.
Call it insurance. But don't worry, Brian said, popping by. He's trainable.
Creek saw that Hubu Afkitog was a realist. Now that it was clear that the right moves would put him in the same position he had expected to be in before, with a few minor limitations, he was ready to get on board. There is still one practical difficulty, he said. The Nidu are set in our ways about many of our opinions about other species.
You're racists, Creek said.
Hubu Afkitog flared for a second, then calmed down.
Agreed, Hubu Afkitog said.
That being the case, it would help to have a compelling explanation as to why and how this human has become the Feihen.
A voice rang clearly through the great hall. Because she is the evolved lamb. Everyone assembled at the dais turned to look at the speaker. It was one of the computer technicians. The second technician stood beside him.
She is what? Hubu Afkitog said to the technician. Normally, of course, he would have had a technician beaten for daring to speak at a ceremony like this. It simply wasn't done. But there were a number of things about today's ceremony that simply weren't done.
She is the evolved lamb, the technician said again. I am Francis Hammond, bishop of the Church of the Evolved Lamb. My associate is Sam Berlant, who is also with the church. For decades, our church has concerned itself with bringing forth the evolved lamb, an entity who combines the best qualities of humanity and the pastoral qualities of the lamb. To aid us in our quest and to avoid misidentifying the evolved lamb, we created a crucible test. A test that only one with the qualities of the evolved lamb would be able to accomplish. That test, Hubu Afkitog, was your clan's coronation ceremony. There are only two classes of people who can perform it. Members of your clan and the lamb herself. And here she is.
I don't understand, Hubu Afkitog said. Your computer technicians.
Yes, Hammond agreed. Computer technicians who belong to a church. A church that through its business ventures provided your clan with the android's dream sheep and the computer network which now controls your world and through which your clan's power has run. We provided your clan the means to power. The cost was that it was also the test for a goal of our own. The creation of an entity prophesied by our founders. Look at her, Hubu Afkitog. She is the living embodiment of an entire religion's purpose. Everybody turned to look at Robin Baker.
Oh, for God's sake, Robin Baker snapped. How divine can I be? My feet hurt, I have gas, I need to pee.
Hubu Afkitog turned back to Francis Hammond.
Be that as it may, your test has caused my clan to fall from power.
Creek spoke up.
On the contrary, Hubu Afkitog, he said. Another clan challenged your power and came to within a hair's breadth of taking the throne.
Only the very fact of who and what Miss Baker is and her actions during the ceremony prevented it from happening.
If she wasn't the evolved lamb, Narf Wingi Tog would now be Feihen, Hammond said, and your clan would have suffered gravely.
But now she is Feihen, Hubu Afkitog said.
Who was willing to hand nearly all of her powers to you, Hubu Afkitog? Creek said. If I were you, I'd sell the divine intervention angle to your clan and kin. I'd sell it hard.
I need to confer with my clan, Hubu Afkitog said.
But of course, Creek said. Hubu Afkitog walked off.
I notice you didn't mention to Hubu Afkitog that your church has manipulated events as much as anyone has in this little adventure, Creek said to Hammond.
Details, details, Hammond said, and looked up at Robin. Speaking of which, there's a small detail about the church Miss Baker needs to know.
What is it? Robin asked.
The Church of the Evolved Lamb exists to bring about the Evolved Lamb, Hammond said. The church's steering council, which Sam and I represent here, is in unanimous agreement. It's you.
What if I don't want the position? Robin asked.
It's not an office, Sam Berlant said, about the church Miss Baker needs to know.
What is it? Robin asked.
The Church of the Evolved Lamb exists to bring about the Evolved Lamb, Hammond said. The church's steering council, which Sam and I represent here, is in unanimous agreement. It's you.
What if I don't want the position? Robin asked.
It's not an office, Sam Berlant said.
It's a state of being.
Even if you don't want to be it, you're still it. Your arrival is incredibly significant to us, and to all religions. It's the first time in recorded history that a prophesied religious entity has been intentionally brought into being.
You're the religious find of the millennium, Miss Baker.
Swell, Robin said.
There are compensations, Hammond said gently.
The church has significant material, real estate, and business holdings. These are all administered by a governing council and various boards of directors, but technically, it's all held in trust for the Evolved Lamb, should he or she ever arise.
Robin stared for a second, and then held up her hand, as if to pause the conversation.
So you're saying I own the church?
Well, no, Hammond said. Just all of its assets.
So, that's a lot, Robin said.
It's not bad, Hammond allowed.
So, we're talking, what, $1 million? $2 million?
Hammond looked over to Sam Berlant. As of the market close last Friday, $174.9 billion, Sam said.
$175 billion, Robin said.
Billion, as in the one with the 9 zeros after it.
That's the one, Hammond said.
Technically, it makes you the single richest person on Earth, Sam Berlant said. The Walton family is worth more in aggregate, but there are a couple hundred of them.
I feel like I just swallowed a golf ball, Robin said, and moved to sit.
Creek moved over to steady her.
Easy, Robin, he said. You already run a planet. This is just a little extra bonus.
Harry, Robin said, do you have any clue how far outside reality you have to be to describe $175 billion as a bonus?
Just promise you'll remember me at Christmas time, Creek said. He sat down next to Robin, who smiled and patted his shoulder.
Hubu Afkitog returned a few minutes later.
The Afkitog clan is prepared to offer its allegiance to the new Feyhen, he said. Our influence is such that we believe that the other clans, even the Wingitog clan, will follow suit.
Robin stood. So, you will do as I say, she said.
Yes, Hubu Afkitog said.
Really? Robin said.
You may choose to test our loyalty in any way you choose, Hubu Afkitog said.
Brian, Robin said.
Yes, Feyhen, Brian said.
Would you inform Secretary Heffer his presence is requested by the Feyhen?
At once, Brian said.
Jim Heffer arrived 2 minutes later.
You asked for me, Feyhen, Secretary Heffer said.
I did, Robin said.
My good friend Hubu Afkitog and I were recently discussing the unfortunate series of misunderstandings between Nidu and the UNE. He and I agreed that, in light of the possible damage between these great nations, Nidu could benefit from making a goodwill gesture to the peoples of Earth and her colonies. Isn't that right, Hubu Afkitog?
That is entirely correct, Feyhen, Hubu Afkitog said.
I'm glad to hear it, Heffer said.
What does the Feyhen have in mind?
Oh, not me, Robin said. What I'm about to say comes entirely from Hubu Afkitog.
Secretary Heffer, aren't there 2 Nidu destroyers in orbit around Earth at the moment?
I believe there are, Heffer said.
I hear they're very nice, Robin said. Top of the line and all of that.
They are excellent ships, Heffer said.
Well then, Robin said, Hubu Ofkitog wants the UNE to have them. Don't you, Hubu Ofkitog?
Creek spent the next several seconds wondering if Anidu's head could, in fact, actually explode from rage.
There is nothing that would give me greater pleasure, Hubu Ofkitog finally said, in a tone that suggested his entrails had cramped.
That is wonderful news, Heffer said. Our Secretary of Defense will be immensely pleased. May I pass along your compliments, Hubu Ofkitog?
Please do, Hubu Ofkitog said tightly.
And Secretary Heffer, Robin said, you may also inform your government that Hubu Ofkitog is to be governor of Nidu and her colonies. He has my authority to act in my place in every manner.
Very good, Fahen, Heffer said. My congratulations, Governor. Will there be an installation ceremony?
Hubu Ofkitog looked to Robin Baker.
It is up to the Fahen.
Well, I think we should, Robin said. Let's say in 1 hour. After all, everyone is already here.
Robin stepped down from the dais and walked over to Narf Wingitog, still prone on the ground.
And as for you, you little shithead, she said, I'm going to make sure you get the best seat in the house to watch everything you ever wanted given to someone else. Tell me what you think about that.
The gubernatorial ceremony was very much like the coronation ceremony, with the exception that instead of a blood sacrifice and a brain scan, Robin Baker symbolized the transfer of power to Hubu Ofkitog by providing him a single Fahensol flower from a bouquet she held in her hands. Brian used the impressive Nidu computer voice to announce that Hubu Ofkitog had been given penultimate control of the Nidu computer network, and then everyone in the crowd applauded in the manner appropriate for their own species and filed out to go to any number of ceremonies and parties around Nidu before going home. In time, only a few people remained in the Great Hall, paired off in conversation. Creek and Jim Heffer, Robin and Tok, Brian and Ben Jovna, and Francis Hammond and Sam Berlant, who were finishing a final diagnostic on the Nidu network. Creek watched from a distance as Brian and Ben sat in the distance. Well, Ben sat. Brian projected himself sitting, and reacquainted themselves with each other. Creek could see Ben's eyes were red-rimmed, but at the moment he was laughing at something his brother was telling him.
It's a hell of a thing, Heffer said, to lose a brother and to get him back.
It is, Creek said. I wondered how Ben would take it and if he'd hate me for doing it, but I needed Brian's help. Without him, none of this would have worked.
Don't sell yourself short, Creek, Heffer said. Without you, we'd be at war and we would have lost, and your friend Robin would probably be dead by now. You saved her and saved us. You didn't save the universe, but you can plan on doing that next week. Creek smiled.
I'm taking next week off, he said, and possibly the week after that, with your permission.
Take all the time you want, Creek, Heffer said. Just tell me you'll be back. I don't know that we need any more like you. I don't think my heart could handle the strain, but I'm glad we have at least one of you around.
He looked at his watch and stood. I've got to collect Ben. We have a shuttle to catch. How are you getting back?
Hammond and Berlant have offered to take us home with their corporate transport, Creek said. Although, if I understand everything correctly, it's actually that Robin is letting them hitch a ride on her transport.
Don't rush home, Heffer said, and held out his hand. Make a few stops. Enjoy yourselves.
We've already had one cruise this week, Creek said, shaking Heffer's hand. One's enough.
The two men made their goodbyes, and then Creek walked over to Robin and Tok.
Tok's telling me about his home, Robin says. It sounds nice. He's been away for 2 years.
That's a long time, Creek said.
It is, Tok said. But I'll be going home now. I've seen enough of other places to last me a while.
Amen to that, Robin said.
Hammond and Sam Berlant walked up.
Excuse me, Miss Baker, Hammond said. We're just about finished up here. We'll be ready to leave shortly. On the return trip home, I know that Sam here would like to talk to you a bit about your financials and your new responsibilities with the church holdings.
You're not expecting me to run things, are you? Robin said. I barely keep a pet store going. If you have me run the church, you're all going to be in a soup line by the end of the week.
We were actually hoping you'd let the corporate governance continue as it has, Sam said.
That sounds good to me, Robin said.
But there's still quite a lot we need to get through, Sam said.
I don't suppose it could wait a few weeks, Robin said.
It's really better, Sam began, but Robin put up her hand. The reason I ask is because at this moment,
I just want to be Robin Baker. Not the Feyhen of Nidu, not the evolved lamb, and not the richest person on Earth. Not even my own nation. Just Robin Baker, who owns a pet store where by now the animals have completely forgotten who I am. Just Robin Baker, who all she wants is to go home now. That's all I want to be, if that's all right with you. Just for a little while, I hope you understand.
Sam looked ready to offer a rebuttal, but Hammond put his hand on Sam's shoulder.
We understand entirely, Robin. That'll be fine with us. We're going to get ready to get out of here. We'll come get you when we're ready to go.
Thank you, Robin said. Hammond and Sam Berlant turned to go.
Excuse me, Tok said. You said earlier that you were Sam Berlant?
I am, Sam said.
I have a message for you, Tok said.
He took out Archie's Book of Prophecies. Sam took it, stared at it for a moment, and then looked at Tok.
You knew Archie, Sam said.
He was my friend, Tok said. Sam motioned to Tok to follow them. He did, leaving Creek and Robin to themselves on the altar of the Great Hall.
So, you really don't want to be any of these things you've become, Creek said to Robin, as they watched Tok walk off with the technicians. Not everyone gets to be their own nation, or a religious icon, or the richest woman ever.
Or a sheep, Robin said. You can't forget that. She reached over to gather up her bouquet of Fey and Sol.
Or a sheep, Creek agreed.
But with the exception of the sheep, most people would jump at a chance to be the things you are.
Would you? Robin asked.
No, Creek said. I like being me most of the time. But I suspect I'm not like most people.
This much I knew, Robin said.
She handed Creek a flower. Take this, Harry. Payment for keeping me alive.
$175 billion, and I get a flower, Creek said, taking it.
It's the thought that counts, Robin said.
Thanks, Creek said, and held it to his nose.
It smells nice.
It does, Robin agreed.
It's talking to you in the language of flowers.
What's it saying? Creek asked.
There's no place like home, Robin said.
That's a nice message, Creek said.
It's the best, Robin said.
Creek held his flower up for Robin. She smiled, leaned over, and inhaled deeply.
This has been an Audible Frontiers production. Executive producer, Steve Feldberg. Producers, Mike Charzik and Stefan Rudnicki. Directed and engineered by Cassandra DeCure. Edited by Ted Scott. Music by Michael Whalen. Copyright 2006 by John Scalzi. Audio recording copyright 2010 by Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.